For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Bleav.
This is Bleav and Georgia Dogs Podcast on the Bleav Podcast Network.
Scored a touchdown earlier on a direct snap. Now it's Michelle's turn, running all the way. Gets to the edge. Sonny Michelle will send the Dogs home to the championship game.
53 and a half yard drive near hash, kick right, snap, hold, kick is away, it's reaching, and it is good, 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 Hot Pod does it, all right, Hot Pod.
Wilcox with an up and out, wide open, touchdown, Israel Truth.
All right. Welcome back. From our hiatus, from our vacation, we open up season two of the Bleav in Georgia Dogs podcast on the Bleav Podcast Network. We are also coming to you live from Brinks TV. Glad to be here. Glad to be back. Glad to be kicking off season two. We are two hosts, two dogs with an authentic view on the Georgia sports, and we bring it to you real, we bring it to you straight, and that's what we do. And we don't, there's no fluff, but there's also a lot of positivity in this podcast. So just wanted to reset the expectations of what you're going to hear when you tune into the Bleav in Georgia Dogs podcast. Again, we are on the Bleav Podcast Network, anywhere where you find your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart, any of those places. You can find us, and you can also find us right here at Brinks TV on all our social media accounts as well. Bleav in Dogs, at Coach Burton 36 on Twitter, at Burton.Corey on Instagram. And joining me is the guy from the video clip, number 28, Israel Troop, at Troopstar 28 on social media. You can find him and follow him there. Israel, coming back from daddy duty. How's it going, man?
It's going good. Just put my little man down. After a fight before the ages once again for the night. So ready to rock and roll. Glad to be back, man. We were off last week. You know, we had that week. I know you guys had 2 weeks. So we've been back at it, man. Glad to talk some football.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I don't know about South Georgia. I'm pretty sure it's really hot down there, but it's really hot up here in Tennessee as well. We just kicked off our first week back of practice. We've got actually our numbers have increased from June. So close to 60 practice today. So that's good. Our numbers are good. What are y'all's numbers like?
We had about 80 right now. We went to the other Bulldog country in Thomasville, where our man Coach Bobo's from, had a little OTA against them today. So I'm getting prepared to go to Concord County this weekend for a 7-on-7. You know, the big one's in Hoover this weekend. Yep. Concord's putting on a big one down here in South Georgia. So it's going to be a good one.
Absolutely. Well, we got our own little session over at Battleground Academy tomorrow morning. So getting the play sheet ready, ready to rock and roll, ready to throw some touchdowns. So it's a very, very, very special edition of the Bleav in Georgia Dogs podcast. We are going behind enemy territory. One of the goals actually started on this last season, didn't make it through all the teams, but. Now that we know that there's a guaranteed season, we can start our quest through all of our opponent previews. And to do so, we bring in our man from the Bleav in Kentucky podcast. It's Vinny Hardy. What's up, Vinny?
Fellas, man, it's that time of year again. How y'all doing, man? Good to be on.
Well, glad to have you, man. We're doing great.
Glad to have you, man. Doing good.
Hey, Israel, man, look, you're going to blink. You talking about that fight for the ages and putting your little man down to bed. You're going to blink. They're going to be 12-8. They're going to be getting their own snack, brushing their own teeth and putting themselves to bed before you know it, man. It flies.
I know. No, I got a 2 and a 10 month old. So, I mean, they're growing up fast.
Yeah, I got one starting kindergarten next year. We actually got an IEP meeting for them on Tuesday. So that'll be fun. Figure out how kindergarten's going to look for our little man. And if you want to catch up on all the fun stories, check out our dad pod from a few weeks ago, literally the week before we started on on Brinks. So check that out. That's if you want to hear some fun stories. Lots of poop. So we are the Believe in Georgia Dogs podcast presented by betonline.ag. Guys, we are almost halfway through July. Things are heating up. It's crazy out there, man. The NBA finals, it's living up to the billing. Vinny, are you, I know you and Tony talk a lot of basketball. Are you guys going to, are you going to jump in on this NBA finals action?
Oh, TD kind of does. I'm not a huge betting guy. I like to watch and keep up with it and see the ebbs and flows. Not a big action guy, but definitely glad that Bet Online sponsors all of our podcasts, though.
Absolutely. Well, if you're into sports betting, Bet Online is where you can find it. They have all the latest odds, news, and information for online sports betting needs. So if you do get that itch, Vinny, go visit the website today, or you can use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So before that next tip off, face off, or pitch, head over to Bet Online and start playing today. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Vinny, glad to have you. Kentucky is one of the most intriguing teams in the SEC East. I host another show called Beast of the East and a third show called SEC After Dark. And, you know, Kentucky is one of those teams that we don't really know because it's a new change in philosophy. There's some things going on at the quarterback, and there's a lot of questions to be answered, but they have a lot of potential to really make some noise within the Eastern Division and within the conference. So we're going to start at that quarterback position, and then we'll get to kind of the overall philosophy and how that kind of ties into maybe what decision they're going to make. But what are you hearing on this quarterback battle with Joey Gatewood and Bo Allen?
You had those guys, Joey and Bo, already there, kind of incumbents. But Kentucky's also been active in the transfer portal at various different positions, including quarterback. You had Will Levis transfer in from Penn State. There's also a change at the offensive coordinator position. Eddie Gran is no longer there.
Probably a good thing, right?
As far as, and he's a nice guy as you ever want to meet, but the production as far as aerial, it just never was able to get the offense balanced. You know, Kentucky really good running the ball. The passing game was just lacking. Never could hit any deep shots. Is it quarterbacks? Is it receivers? Those are kind of the two issues that still need to be addressed as far as improving the team. So to bring in Liam Cohen from the Rams, he's the new offensive coordinator, and he's kind of connected, if you want to say, is Will Levis his guy. He kind of went and got him. Okay. Now they still got to compete in fall camp. Everybody's, you know, supposedly going to get a fair shake, but a lot of early indications might point to Will Levis being the starter when all the dust settles. Gatewood's had a good spring. He's probably would be more primed and ready to challenge Levis, but a lot of people think Levis is going to be the starter opening day.
Have you been able to see much of what Levis can bring to the table as far as ability or heard?
He's a big guy. He can scramble. You saw some of his action at Penn State. He's got big arm talent. You want to talk about that. He can do it. He can run a lot of, you know, is he able to pick guys apart and the accuracy? That's the question when he really gets to play a lot. He didn't play a ton at Penn State. He had some good moments. There've been some flashes. So can he consistently, you know, put the ball where he needs to put it? That will be, you know, what everybody's wanting to see when the bullets start flying.
Right. I was wondering, because I was going to ask you, you know, back in the day, because I grew up during the Woodson and the Randall Cobb era, you know, things like that. So do you think Kentucky can get back to that point? They've always been good on defense, you know. They'd always come out one game and beat us, you know, when I was at Georgia. So, you know, they've always had that potential. Do you think they can get back to the point to where they can throw the ball, they can run the ball, they can kind of put everything together as a complete package with a new offensive coordinator and some new guys coming in?
That's the goal for sure, because as limited as they have been passing, they've still been able to do work on the ground. The offensive line is probably the strongest group unit on the team. You got Chris Rodriguez from y'all's home state of Georgia coming back, and he's, you know, got a almost 800 yards last year in the 10-game SEC season. He's, you know, one of the college football focuses, PFF top running backs returning. So just get some balance. We had Chris on Believe in Kentucky a few weeks ago, and he's just talking about how this offense gives him the chance to see a normal box. Maybe I won't have to just have a stack box down in and down out. Just the thought of him able to get downhill on seven in the box. Oh my God, what a concept. So he's kind of excited about the possibility of that. I mentioned Kentucky being active in the transfer portal. They also, receiver has been an issue. Quarterback's been an issue. They addressed quarterback with Levis. Wandale Robinson transfers in from Nebraska. He's from Kentucky. Spent 2 years out there with the Cornhuskers. Was kind of misused. They were trying to use him as a tailback out there.
A lot of people were misused at Nebraska. So,
Frosty, man. He's kind of.
What happened to him?
But the selling point for Wandale, Cohen plans on using him a lot like Cooper Kupp for the Rams. You know, everywhere jet sweeps in the slot, getting him the ball in space. So he's very dynamic. That could definitely help in addressing the passing game. He can also take the top off. We haven't had a real deep threat in a while. You know, Jeff Badette, 4 or 5 years ago, before he transferred to Oklahoma, was kind of last legit, you know, deep threat the secondaries had to really worry about. So the addition of Wandale, the addition of Levis, you've already got a good offensive line. You've got a stable in the backfield with Rodriguez. Chris Rodriguez said himself, he said, when I'm believing Kentucky, if you see me go take a break or get a blow, it might be an extended blow because of the other running backs, Kavazie Smoke, Juton McClain, Travis Tisdale. If those guys get in and start toting the rock, he said, you might see me on the sidelines for a little bit longer than you would expect to see me on the sidelines. So, you know, you get the receivers and the quarterback in there to balance it out and take some pressure off. Like you said at the beginning, Corey, the potential is there to really do some things offensively.
Absolutely, man. They have a lot of playmakers there, and I'm excited for it. And, you know, to follow up on the brand new offensive coordinator position and the change in philosophy, Israel, you and I are offensive coordinators, right? And, you know, we understand that there's quite a bit of transition. And I know you probably got a million questions about this as well. But like the adjustment from coming from the pros to college, you know, there's been a lot of coordinators that have struggled with it. There've been some that have been successful, obviously. So Vinny, what have you heard as far as the transition goes? Are guys picking things up pretty quickly? Is he adjusting to that 20-hour-a-week rule where it's not the case in the NFL? What are you hearing on that situation?
He's kind of adjusting. He's talking to some other guys, just the whole hash mark thing from the NFL, all the differences. He was kind of soaking that up. And he's a young guy too, which, you know, brings in fresh ideas and you know, because he's a hot commodity coming in. Initially, he was a little, you know, in spring, a little bit irked about how things was coming in with installation and how guys were adapting to it. The curb, you know, it was like the spirit is willing, but, you know, still having to kind of keep reteaching and implementing stuff, which, you know, to me is kind of to be expected. You know, you you know, the guys see this NFL dude, you want to learn it, but it's not going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. So he was a little bit, you know, not pleased initially, but it's starting to come around. There's a new offensive line coach is here as well. So you still got the big blue wall, but John Slarman passed away. So you bring in Eric Wolford from South Carolina. So a lot of transitioning is going on, and that's a veteran group, but overall it's starting to kind of fall in place now, but initially it was a little tough sledding out of the gate in the spring.
Yeah, it's always different when you go from dealing with grown men to dealing with to essentially, you know, young men, kids, 8, 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, you know, who didn't know how to do things at first, you know, because like I said, y'all were a running team. You know, y'all are running a couple RPOs here, but y'all pretty much ground and pound and, you know, control the clock. And now you come with an NFL guy who's bringing all these ideas and things are moving fast. You know, it is frustrating. You know, me and Corey both know it's been OC. You know, you go from one place to another and expect it to be the same. Well, a lot of times it's not. So you find yourself yelling a little bit more, pulling your hair out a little bit more, you know, and then you start to realize, hey, I got to teach these kids everything I want them to know. So, you know, it's always a learning curve as you go. Yeah, I'm hoarse now from yelling today. So, you know, you always figure out, you know, what you need to do best, you know, sometimes it's just a different approach, you know, to how you do everything. So, you know, when you got new guys coming in, new coaches coming in, new faces coming in. So, you know, it's always a point to where, you know, it might not be this year, you know, but they'll figure it out and they'll be better and better each year, you know, as long as they progress and the team buys into what he's doing.
Yeah, and a new running back coach as well. John Settle comes in.
It's a full on coach change.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was needed. I think the offensive stuff was getting stale over there, and I think they needed a shift because, you know, when Chaney left Georgia and Coley took over and it was kind of a mess, they needed a shift from that. They needed to break it. They needed to break up from the grunt and punt. They just needed to separate themselves from that. Kentucky the same. I mean, that 14-3 Kentucky game this past season was like watching paint dry. Man, it was one of those where – like sometimes every once in a while I can appreciate a good low scoring game when there's really good defensive plays and it's like good and competitive. But this one was just, it was Kirby wanted to get out of there. Let's run the clock. Kentucky's like, yeah, we're not winning. So let's run the clock. Let's get out of here. Let's shorten this thing and move on to next week. So hopefully
any offense at all. I mean, it was the year before it was 21-0 down between the hedges in that monsoon.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know, Georgia is still the standard in the East. Everybody knows that. But defensively, you hold Georgia to 21. I mean, it was raining, so wasn't much happening regardless that night. But then last year, they come to Lexington and you hold them to 14. Any offense at all, and you put pressure on the Dogs. Kentucky was down 11, but it felt like they were down 30 because we just couldn't get anything going. You know, if you had anything, any kind of way to put a little stress on that Georgia defense to you know, you never know. So
if you watch the LSU from 2019, Alabama from this year and years past, if you can't throw the ball in the SEC, you're not going to be successful. Yeah. That old lineup in the power eye, you know, all these personnels, big body personnels going into the game. You can't do that stuff anymore. Defenses are smart now. They're going to load the box and good luck trying to block everybody. Exactly. If you can't throw the ball in this league, you're not going to win. And I think that you guys are starting to figure that out. I think Stoops is tired of seeing it. He's a defensive guy. Yeah. You know, I think he's tired of seeing that. And he's starting to figure out if we can't throw the ball, we're not going to beat people. Same thing at Georgia now. How many times have you known Georgia throw the ball 85 times in the spring game? Never. Yeah. Even when I was there, we didn't even do that. You know, so if you can't throw the ball, if you can't throw the four pass in this league, you're not going to win football games. And I think all the coaches are starting to figure that out.
Absolutely. And it starts up front, Vinny. I know it says it replacing three starters. I had one of those moments where reading was not my friend. And it said they are returning three starters. So, the returning three starters on the offensive line, you said is a veteran group. It's an exciting group, I think. And you know, the run game will always be strong because that's kind of what they've built. So, how is this offensive line, you know, gonna react to this new philosophy? who are some guys that are waiting in the wings to step in and fill the voids of the other two guys that are leaving? You know, what do we look like on the offensive line? Any surprises there?
The first surprise was Darian Kennard, the right tackle, deciding to come back. You mentioned how replacing should be returning. Mm-hmm. We didn't think he would be one of the returning starters. We thought he was going to go to the league. He comes back, and that was like, wow, re-bolstering an offensive line. Everybody kind of thought he was leaving. You still got some guys that have been there. You know, Kenneth Horsley, Eli Cox that have been there. Some veterans that have been through it before. You got a freshman coming in from Lexington, Jagger Burton, who may get in the mix right off the bat. You know, Jeremy Flax is there too. But as I mentioned, the theme, a lot of these answers I keep going back to, Kentucky was active in the transfer portal. This offensive line was the strength of the team. And then you add in Darren Rosenthal from LSU. The left tackle comes in. Kennard had initially planned to move from right tackle to left tackle just to showcase what he can do on the next level. Flip on over to the left side. Show he can, you know, man both spots, just enhancing your draft stock and so on and so forth. Now, and you know, I said it the other day, Kentucky was on his O-line. It's kind of like the rich getting richer, like the Yankees, you know, they got everybody and then they go out and trade for, you know, an all-star like they do every single year. Mm-hmm. Kentucky's offensive line was in great shape. And then you bring in Darren Rosenthal from LSU, who started on the national championship team. And now, does Kennard stay at the left tackle? Does he go back to the right? Does Rosenthal's not going to sit the bench. He's going to play and be one and done. He's going to play this year and then go on to the NFL. Kind of like Kelvin Joseph did, transferring again from LSU, who had that great pick six at Tennessee. So let me just go ahead and throw that out there.
Yeah.
Now the second round draft pick for my Dallas Cowboys. So Rosenthal and Joseph were tight at LSU. He saw it work out for him at Kentucky. Now he transfers to Kentucky to go to an offensive line that, like I said, it's been the strength of the team for years. And now you add a guy of his caliber to the mix. So it's just, you know, as for us Kentucky football fans, this is, you guys do this kind of stuff all the time, but we're used to this kind of stuff in basketball. But to see this happening on the football side, it's like, wow, we dudes from LSU transferring here. Joey Gaywood from Auburn. What?
It's becoming a parallel universe. Like y'all are turning into a football school and Tennessee's turning into a basketball school. It's crazy.
Yeah. So
Israel, the great dilemma, what do you do with Rosenthal and Kennard? Do you leave Kennard at right tackle and put Rosenthal in at left? Do you make the switch and say, Rosenthal, you got to play right tackle? What would you do in that situation?
I'm putting the best combination out there because they both can't sit on the bench. They both got to play, especially, you know, with Kentucky opening up the offense more. They're already good up front. You know, they could run the ball, but can they pass protect? Now, you really want your best pass protectors up front. So if I have to move one to left and one to right, that's what I'm going to do. You know, it's really no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's how it's going to be, and this is how we're going to roll with it. So, you know, you got one coming back, one transferring in, two good ones. You know, they're NFL caliber kids, so they can't sit on the bench. You know, the pedigree of Kentucky offensive line has always been, they've always been good up front. You know, now you got two studs up front now, and they both cannot sit the bench. So you have to find a way to, I want to say make them happy, but not really. It's what you're going to do. One's going to play left, one's going to play right. And if you can't play left or right, then we'll switch you to, and then we'll roll with it how best we can. But that's how it's going to be. And, you know, the vertical game has to work for Kentucky. And, you know, with Georgia, our linebackers are good coming off the edge. You need great athletic players out there blocking on the edges. So I think both those guys have to play one way or another, no matter where you put them.
Yeah, I'm with you there. You just got to figure out who fits where and who can do what, and, you know, have a competition, have some scrimmages, have some one-on-one periods. Who's my better pass blocker? You go to left tackle. Who's my slightly better run blocker? You go to right tackle and shut up. So that's my philosophy.
That's it.
And you know, they're blocking for a stable of great running backs. I mean, you still to have Kavasse Smoke still on the roster, that makes me feel good because he's got the coolest name in the entire country. even more so than Smoke Monday. And then you have Chris Rodriguez, you have Tisdale. And then you have a bunch of other guys that are going to contribute. Can we see is there a possible situation where we could have a 2,000 yard passer, 1,000 yard rusher?
If the potential is there, and that's better than we have been, you know, yeah. We've seen the passing game the past few years, and we don't look, it's a production business. You know, you played there, Israel, Corey, know what you're a coach. It's all about what happens. Everybody loved Eddie Grand. Nice guy, but it just didn't work. It didn't click. We never thought about a 2,000 yard passer for these past few years. Some of it was bad luck. Some of it, he just never was able to start a season with a QB1. He had to do a lot of flipping and changing the offense on the fly. The Lynn Bowden year, you know, all the quarterbacks get hurt and you go to Lynn Bowden. Mm-hmm. The year you thought you had a QB1 and Drew Barker, he gets hurt, you know, week two at Florida, so you got to go to backup Steven Johnson. Some stuff was bad luck, and some stuff his passing offense, like Israel said, it just
in college you create your own luck.
Yeah, and if you don't hit some passes, if you don't connect on some deep shots, you're not going to be as successful as you could be if you do. So, you know, that's kind of the theme of Eddie Grand's time at UK. But the potential, if Levis comes in, you got Wandale Robinson, and then that kind of puts all these other receivers, you know, you don't have Josh Ali being the number one receiver now. He can be a number two receiver, and it kind of gets everybody in their spots. Got a lot of freshmen that can come in and kind of, you know, Tay-Tay Crooms and all these other guys, Dekel Crowders can come in and try to contribute. And Wandale will be the focus of all the defense. But like you said, to answer your question, the potential is there. It all hinges on the quarterback and how quickly the offense can get rolling. But it's nice to even think like that, even talk like that.
Absolutely, yeah, man.
It's good. The one thing about an RPO type offense, which you guys have had these last couple of years, is you have to be able to throw the ball vertically. You know, if you're coming up and people know you're going to run the ball 95% of the time, they're going to play man. It's really hard to throw RPOs against man coverage, and they're stacking the box. So now you guys have a different element to the point to where people are going to have to prepare for you vertically. If you can start beating people vertically, that's going to loosen some people up. That's going to open some windows for those quick passes. Then it's going to loosen up the defense so you can run the ball. So like you always said, the potential is there. You know, you just got to find the right trigger man. Offensive line is great. Now you just got to build some weapons around him, you know, and make sure they understand their alignment assignment. I think Kentucky's going to be pretty good, except for one game out of the year, and that's when they play the Dogs.
That's right. That's when they play Dogs. And we'll talk about the schedule here in a little bit. But I want to flip to the defensive side of the ball because I know Vinny's fired up about defense. I know Kentucky fans are fired up about defense because that's what Mark Stoops does best. You lose Kelvin Joseph, you lose Brandon Echols to the NFL, but you had a defense that you take out Alabama, Ole Miss, and Florida, who were three of the most explosive offenses in the entire conference. They held six teams to 21 points or fewer, and they led the SEC in takeaways. So if you can, that's that. If you ever listen to Kirby Smart, he loves his word havoc, creating havoc, and they did a good job of that. When you look at this defense, what is the biggest question mark that you see on this defense? And then what is the biggest bright spot, the thing you're looking forward to the most about this defense?
The biggest question mark probably linebacker. And a little bit on the D line. If I don't know, maybe it's a tie or it's 1A, 1B, because you did lose Phil Hoskins. You did lose the big dude. McCall is the backup. You did lose Quinn Bohanna off the D line, Phil Hoskins. Bo Hanna, along with Kelvin Joseph, both went to my Cowboys, who badly needed some defenders. So who can kind of step up on the line? Still got Josh Pascoe there, who is a veteran, been there, experience, leadership, the unquestioned leader of the defense. Linebacker is a little thin, not thin, but a little bit thin. J.J. Weaver was lost last year to a knee injury, so he'll be back later in the season. You lose Jamin Davis to the draft. Like you said, a lot of players lost. So linebacker is probably a question. Again, here we go, transfer portal. Jaquez Jones transfers in from Ole Miss to kind of fill that need at linebacker. Luke Fulton transferred from Michigan State to also fill the void at linebacker. You got some freshmen coming up, Trevin Wallace and Martez Thrower, some guys that can prove themselves and have some talent. But I guess I'd go 1A question at linebacker, kind of who's filling Jamin Davis's spot. And 1B would be the D-line as far as the questions. The bright spot is going to be the secondary. You lost a lot, but you still got a lot. You know, you got Cedric Dort, you got Yusuf Corker, you got Tyrell Ajon. Devontae Robinson is coming back for a senior season. Didn't think he would be coming back, but he's back as well. You got some young guys that are nipping at their heels, Vito Tisdale and guys like that are going to make the coaches put them on the field. So the bright spot will be that back end. Again, that secondary is loaded with a lot of depth and experience and talent back there.
I love watching you guys play against Florida. I mean, the Florida game, watching that secondary go to work, you know, showed me something about Kentucky. Kentucky's going to play good defense. We know that. You know, Coach Stoops is not going to let that side of the ball, you know, lack. So watching that secondary go to work, I mean, I'm excited to watch those guys. I really am, just like I'm excited to watch our guys. Because, you know, those guys are playing, they're grinding, they're playing with a passion. You know, they're having fun while they're doing it, you know. And like you said, I think D-line, you think you guys would be fine, but I think the linebacker, like you said, is the main question that I know, you know, just from an outside guy looking in, I think is a big question for you guys. Y'all have always had a great linebacking core. You know, now it's to the point to where, you know, you get some injured guys back, you know, can they fill the void? You got some guys that can step up, can they fill that void? So if you guys can fill the void and that front seven, you know, can do a real good job, I think y'all would be just as good, if not better, on defense this year than y'all have been in the past. Because, like I said, the secondaries, y'all also shrink this year. But, you know, if you can't get a pass rush, you can't stop the run. Now we're looking at, oh, here we go again at Kentucky. But I think, you know, if you can find a couple guys that can step up with that linebacker spot, I think y'all going to be pretty dang sporty on defense.
And that depth is getting to where, you know, like I say it again, you guys are used to this. You guys, you know, lose guys, reload, you know, at Georgia and the big dogs. Jamin Davis, who, you know, just went to the first round to the Washington football team, before last year, nobody really knew who he was. He had an opportunity. He jumped in, had a great year. And look, he also had a pick six at Tennessee. So let me throw that out there, just like Kelvin Joseph. So you know, let me throw that out there. But if you look at the depth chart going into last year, Jamin Davis was behind Chris Oates. Chris Oates had a medical situation, had a stroke, and took him out of the equation. That's what presented the door opening for Jamin Davis. So Chris Oates was even better than Davis. He was ahead of Davis on the depth chart. Davis just jumps in and makes the most of his opportunity and parlays that into going number 19 in the first round of the NFL draft. So this is the kind of depth that Kentucky is building that we hadn't seen before. You know, back in the day, you know, Tim Couch and all those that, you know, pretty good talent on the first string. And then when it's time to sub those guys out on the O-line and D-line, that's when other teams start to mash and beat on Kentucky, because the second unit, the third unit, the depth just wasn't there. But they're starting to build depth across the board. And then you plug and play, you lose a guy, the whole next man up thing is kind of really materializing at Kentucky now.
Yeah, I'm excited about Jordan Wright at the linebacker position. You know, you're starting to see a lot of these teams go that Adam Anderson, Britton Cox, you know, the big 6'5", long, 230-240 pounder on the edge to try to get some pass rush, to try to get a presence out there that's athletic enough to play in space and big enough to be a pass rusher and be a force in the run game. Jordan Wright's going to be, I think, a very key player in this defense. If he can get to the quarterback a little bit and do what Kentucky, I feel like Kentucky's identity is getting after the passer. And every year they always have somebody. And even when it's a giant question mark of how are they going to get to the tackle, how are they going to get to the quarterback? There's always that one person that's going to be able to get to the quarterback. To me, I think Jordan Wright's got to fit that bill. I'm excited about him, Vinny. I think he can be a real big standout player for the Wildcats.
Especially with Boogie Watson departing, you need a big year.
Next man up, man.
You need a big year out of him to get those sack numbers up, to get that pressure, to wreak that havoc, like you guys are talking about. Because you guys mentioned how important it is to throw the ball. So you better have somebody come in hot off that edge to disrupt that, or else you will get lit up on the back end. So Jordan Wright is you know, he needs to just jump in there and have a monster year like that to be that guy.
No doubt. No doubt. And, you know, getting after the passer, if they can figure that out on defense, they're going to get more vertical offensively because that's kind of what the Rams do. It's more of, hey, we got some good running backs with Cam Akers and Malcolm Brown, I think, and a few other guys. And then they play action it. And I'm excited to see what they're going to do with Matt Stafford, not to be believing the LA Rams or not to steal Ryan Dyrus' thunder on LAFB. But there's some parallels here to, you know, what Sean McVay does, what Cohen's going to do and kind of what he brings with him to Kentucky. That's the most fascinating part to me and how the defense is going to kind of play into that. As far as helping them out. And you know, I think for once, there's not a ton of pressure on the defense, which has got to make Mark Stoops feel a little bit more relieved because I do think the offense can hold the ball a little bit more. I do think the offense doesn't need optimal conditions to score points. I do think they can make some hay out of some bad situations. So, or out of some not so favorable situations. So you got to feel good about that part of it, right?
For sure. And I think if the wide receivers aren't, you know, maybe outside of Wan'Dale Robinson, what Cohen wants or needs or expects to run his system, you know, in year one, I think he can tweak it and still get production out of the tight ends. Cause that group is strong as well. You know, Keaton Upshaw, Bates, freshman Dingle coming in. He's got a lot of guys there at the tight end spot that maybe he can kind of, if he's got to diversify his offense a little bit, he can still, you know, get some passing accomplished with the tight end group. He's got some guys there too. If the receivers don't step up like, you know, they need to, he's got that option as well with the tight end group.
One thing that, you know, they can take a page out of Baltimore Ravens, you know, things that they did with Lamar Jackson. You know, they had a great group of tight ends. You know, they really didn't have any playmakers at receiver, you know, to Hollywood Brown.
Changed.
Now they just drafted Rashad Bateman. So, you know, they're getting some guys. But, you know, they change their personnel and adapt to what Lamar Jackson does well. We know we can run the ball, you know, and we got tight ends. So let's form our offense around that. And now let's sprinkle some guys around them, you know, to help them out. And that's what they're doing now. You know, and that might be the pedigree for Kentucky to start off. You know, all right, we got a quarterback. We know we can run the ball. We got a strong line. We got some tight ends. Now let's dink and dump. Let's see what we can do with these tight ends. And then next year, as that receiver group comes along, you start recruiting, start hitting the transfer portal. Now you can start implementing what you really want to do and start building and building too. Now you have a juggernaut on offense. Now you're clicking on all cylinders.
And Israel, to piggyback on your point, with the Ravens, you know, they had Hollywood Brown. They had some mediocre guys, and they had Mark Andrews. They built around that. Now they went out and drafted Bateman. They went out and got Tylan Wallace in the draft, and then they signed Sammy Watkins. So now they're bolstering that group. So now they're going to be a little bit more explosive, a little bit more dynamic, and take a little pressure off Lamar Jackson. You look at the college example, I kind of think Ole Miss here. Like in year one, they had Kenny Yeboah. They had one good receiver, Elijah Moore, who's now with the Jets. And then they had some good running backs. They had a good running game, and they were able to score a lot of points. And they had the quarterback situation figured out with, well, not really. They didn't know Matt Corral was going to be Matt Corral until he was Matt Corral.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody thought John Rhys Plumlee was going to be the guy, including myself.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
But Corral stepped in. So it's kind of a similar situation where you got some guys that, like, maybe everybody thinks it's going to be Gatewood's job because he's been there. He has the chemistry, but now you have Levis coming in at the quarterback's position. So I think that they're going to lean heavily on the tight ends. They're going to lean heavily on the run game. And then, you know, they're going to try to find somebody to play the Cooper Kupp role and just get them through the season. And then they start building. Year two, year three, I think this offense is really going to pop. I think you're going to see significant improvement, but it's really going to pop. And to stay on the defensive side of the ball, Stoops is going to love this, and the defensive players are going to love this because it's great complementary football. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Kentucky can bring, their explosiveness, the new philosophy. There's a lot of question marks, which is why I kind of gave the nod to Missouri in the East. But you know, at the end of all this, I might reshuffle the deck on my predictions right before we get to the start of the season. I'm still not a believer in Florida. I think it's a Kentucky, Missouri. Whoever wins that game is going to finish runner up in the East, to be honest with you. So, I'm excited for that. So let's look at the schedule. Let's kind of look at, see how the schedule shakes out, for Kentucky. You know, you have that Missouri game that I just said, that happens early, right? Yeah. September 11th against Missouri. That's an important one, right out of the gate at South Carolina. That's a confidence booster. You host Florida, which if you're going to get Florida this year, get them at home in the grocery bag at Kroger Field, back-to-back home games with Florida and LSU. So if you have to play those two teams, play them at home. LSU is going to be, I don't know what LSU is going to be on by the time they get to October 9th. They could be on fire, or they could be completely in the can and Ed Orgeron is a dead man walking. Then October 16th at Georgia, followed by an open date at Mississippi State, Tennessee, Vandy. And then they end the season with New Mexico State and at Louisville. I'm kind of glad they moved that game to the end of the season now. But let's take a look at the month of September. Obviously ULM and Chattanooga, those games aren't necessarily noteworthy, but you have Missouri and South Carolina to kick off your season. You know, talk to me about those games. Obviously the Missouri game is probably the most important game on the schedule to date, because that's going to be the game that is the measuring stick to me, Vinny, as far as how you're going to look.
Yeah. The Missouri game is, you know, everybody's talking about it. It's the game, the critical game, and this will shape both teams' season. Whoever wins it, Kentucky wins it, they can have a, if they lose, they can have a good, okay season. If they win, they can have a really nice season. So much is hinging on the Missouri game. And you gotta tip your hat to them. They beat Kentucky last year. They won 20-10. Tip your cap. Give Drinkwitz and them credit, they won the game. But it's, and look, you got to play the games when you're on the schedule, and you can't make excuses. You win or you lose. But Kentucky had a ton of stuff going on leading up to Missouri. We talked about John Schlarman, who passed away. The last game he went to, the last game he traveled with the team, and he battled cancer for 2 years, and everybody saw him just kind of decline right before their eyes. The last game he went to was at Tennessee, and that's the first time Kentucky beat Tennessee in Knoxville since 1984. That was the last game he was with the team. He wasn't able to travel.
I was one.
Whoa, my good.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I wouldn't even thought about it yet.
Lord have mercy.
That's nuts, man.
I was seven, so I wasn't paying attention. If I'd known it was going to be so long between wins down there, I'd have been watching that game, been glued to the TV. But he's not able to travel to Columbia. He's to the point where he loses battle with cancer. He doesn't travel to Missouri. Kentucky beat prior to last year, Kentucky beat Missouri 5 years in a row. You know, they had flipped that series. Kentucky was owning it. Give Missouri credit. They won last year, but it was a lot of stuff going on. And I think we get revenge for last year. They come to Lexington. You know, Drinkwitz beats LSU to open his tenure last year, and he beats Kentucky. The LSU win ended up not being that great of a win for him, even though, you know, to start the season, like, oh my God, Missouri beat LSU. So I'm biased, but I don't buy Missouri as being as advanced as everybody thinks based on what they did do last year. I think he'll kind of come back down to earth. I think Kentucky does kind of reestablish having the dominance in the series. Like I said, they beat them. Kentucky doesn't have multiple game win streaks against many teams at all. You know, usually everybody had the streaks against us. You know, Florida had the 30-year streak. Tennessee won 28 in a row. We're on the wrong end of that stuff. But now Kentucky's got a, you know, 5-game win streak against South Carolina, against Missouri, against Vanderbilt. I think they get revenge on Missouri in week two. South Carolina, Shane Beamer is kind of coming into a mess, kind of like Mark Stoops did when he replaced Joker Phillips. You know, it was a hot mess in Lexington when Mark Stoops came in his first year. Joker Phillips had went 2-10. Mm-hmm. Stoops comes in, goes 2-10, gets his brains beaten in until he can get the cupboard stock back up. I think that's what Shane Beamer's about to have. About to get his brain kicked in until he can kind of get stuff built up in Columbia. So, like you said, Corey, South Carolina should be a confidence booster.
Yeah.
And I think they get revenge against Missouri.
Israel. Hey,
Kroger Field is a tough place to play. Playing in Lexington, now that we're about to, you know, from all accounts, you know, we're about to go to full capacity stadium. I think that's going to be a big game. You know, you fill that stadium up, and you get all that blue and white going crazy, you know, student sections going wild. You know, Missouri's going to be in for a fight that game. And, you know, you got South Carolina, too. You know, they're in a rebuilding situation right now, like you said. So, you know, sky's the limit, you know, in September, you know, for Kentucky. You know, you never look past, you know, your smaller opponents. So, but if you come out, you know, you can establish some things, get some confidence going forward. You know, you never know what might happen in September. You can be 4-0. You know, when it's all said and done, you know, or, you know, if you don't stay together and you let little things come in between you, you could be 0-4 or 2-2, you know, at the end of everything. So, you know, the telltale is, you know, can they band together, which I know, I love Coach Stoops. I love what he's about. I don't think he'll let that happen. So, you know, I think it's going to be a good September for Kentucky.
Basilak is good. I'm with you, Corey, with your co-host on the other podcast. Thank God Roundtree is finally gone.
Yeah, I know, right?
But I think Kentucky does get a little payback against Mizzou and Eli when they come to Lexington. And it should shape up to be a pretty good September, like you said, Israel.
I'm going to put that in my back pocket when we make these picks week two. So I'm going to keep your statements in my back pocket. So that leads into a stretch of Florida, LSU, Georgia, obviously going 2-1 in that. Actually 3-0 would be absolute best case scenario in that, but that would mean winning a road game at Georgia, which Georgia's pretty loaded, and we'll get to them. But Florida, LSU, those are definitely winnable games. You're definitely hosting them at Kroger Field. Florida is a team that, to me, I think getting them early, where they are on the schedule, fairly early, I guess, relatively early, is going to be most beneficial for Kentucky to kind of gain that edge. How do you see that one shaking out in LSU as well?
As far as Florida goes, look, it's you know, it's all about what happens when the clock strikes zero. But with Stoops coming from Florida State, it's like he was familiar with them. Kentucky, even before they recruited to this level, has been matching up with Florida pretty good for the last 5 or 6 years and should have more than the one win that they got in the Swamp a couple of years ago. You look at the scores, you know, back when Boone Williams and them was there, they lost 36-30 in overtime. They had a 14-9 loss in Lexington. They had a 28-27 loss where we left receivers uncovered twice, and that's how Florida got two touchdowns. So that's, you know, they've been going toe-to-toe with Florida for a while. They beat them in the Swamp with Josh Allen and those guys. They should have a couple more wins against Florida. I'm with you, Corey. Florida, you talk about having a lot to replace and losing Trask and Pitts and Grimes and everybody down there. I think they'll be a little bit vulnerable. I think it is a winnable game. And like you said with LSU, the title was great, but it's stuff's been a little bit sketchy since. And just don't know if old Coach O can hold it all together. I think they'll be a little bit vulnerable coming in as well. So not trying to be a homer. I'm not that dude. I try to be realistic when I'm looking at it. And I'm like, these are still winnable games for Kentucky. And I'm not just saying it because I'm a Kentucky fan and do a Believe in Kentucky podcast, but they can legit.
There's something to be said. Florida and LSU have come back to the pack a little bit and Kentucky's caught up a little bit. So, I mean, that's viable. I mean, they're winnable games now that they wouldn't be 2 years ago, but they're winnable games now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We all know that LSU and Florida are going to be pretty good on defense. So if you guys, like you said, if you guys can get the offense going and kind of match, you know, kind of what they're doing offensively, I think those are two definitely winnable games for you guys.
Yeah.
And then you get the Georgia game, then you get an open date, and then you get a gauntlet of Mississippi State, Tennessee, and Vandy. Tennessee's a team that I think is not going to be as bad as everybody thinks they are. Style of play is going to come into factor here. A team that I am excited to watch because year two has always been one of Mike Leach's best years in any program that he's been at, Washington State. They went from 2-10 to, I think, 9-3. In the Pac-12, and then year three, they were contending for the divisional title, which they never were able to win because Washington, Oregon, and Stanford were in the way. But Mississippi State's a team that scares me. I think they're going to be one of those teams where I don't think they really have a shot to win the West, but they're going to be one of those teams where they're going to be pesky. They're really tough against the run. They have a good quarterback who had a solid year last year, especially on the tail end of it when they finally inserted him into the lineup. How do you feel about Mississippi State? Then you get Tennessee at home, and then you're at Vanderbilt. That's a pretty good confidence building gauntlet of games. The Mississippi State obviously being the biggest test out of those three.
Yes, and they're still different with Leach. You know, we've seen the physical, you know, mauling, grinded out type Mississippi State teams in years past under Mullen, you know, with Prescott and all those guys when Dak was there. And that's Kentucky's, you know, cross division opponent every year. And I still think Leach is a couple years away. As far as getting it to where he wants, he might, you know, have a big turnaround, like you said, Corey. But for me, you know, they averaged what 40 yards a game rushing last year. I know he's wanting to throw it around, yep. But I think they need to kind of get a little balance the other way. Like Kentucky was needing to improve their passing, they need to maybe become more of a threat in the run game a little bit. I think they're a year or two away from kind of getting the pieces he needs. And Mississippi State has kind of been a thorn in Kentucky's side. They haven't won in Starkville in a long time. There's been teams that have been better than Mississippi State. You know, when Woodson was there and were having a good season, and then they dropped the game against Mississippi State. And I'm like, man, how did they lose with them? You shouldn't have lost to them that year. That's usually what happens. I don't think that happens this year. And the thing about it is, look, I will concede. Kentucky's going to have to show me they can beat Georgia before I'm here saying they're going to beat Georgia. So after they lose to Georgia, there's a bye before they play Mississippi State. They finish that Florida, LSU, Georgia gauntlet. You got a bye before you have to go to Mississippi State. So I like the placement of that bye week. Even if Mississippi State is better than I think they're going to be, I'm glad you get a chance to recharge after that Georgia game before you have to strap it on against Mississippi State.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think it's important, Israel. I know that those open dates for y'all were, I'm sure, crucial, right?
Mm-hmm. They're always crucial. You know, ours is usually a game right before we play Florida. So, you know, it was a good time to, you know, recharge everything, you know, kind of get back to the fundamentals, get back to the basics, you know, get some guys healthy. Because, you know, injuries are going to happen in between that time as well. So, you know, those open weeks are important, especially when you're thinking about a Mississippi State team who's going to come in, who got better as the season went along. You know, Coach Leach got what he wanted, you know, out, you know, kind of got his philosophy in how he wanted things ran. And Mississippi State was on the roll for a little while there, you know, toward the end of the season. So you're going to get them coming in after a bye week, which I think is good. So if you guys can bounce back and get everything rolling after that stretch, you know, some very tough games in between, you know, and meet up against a really good Mississippi State team and squeak out a win, you know, I think that would be very beneficial to you, for your team morale, and, you know, to finish out the season strong. Because you got, you know, you'll get a win against Vandy, you know, because Vandy still hadn't shown me anything yet. You know, I think they got a new head coach, you know, which is going to be really good for them, you know. But I think he's still some time away before Vandy's a real contender, you know, in the league. So the next three games after that bye week are going to be important to, you know, kind of see where Kentucky's going to end up to finish out the year.
And they're going to want – Mississippi State's going to want payback against Kentucky like Kentucky wants revenge against Missouri. You know, Kentucky had – seemed like 27 picks against Mississippi State last year. So they're going to want to, you know, erase that stink from last time they faced UK. So Kentucky will have to be ready. They can't just show up and beat Mississippi State, but I think they will handle it, you know, and like I said, I like that open date after the Georgia game for sure.
Yeah, and Tennessee will their style of play, they're tough to deal with as far as how their pace of play and what they're going to bring. They're going to bring that UCF style of offense. The one thing I'll say about Tennessee is getting them in November is a little bit more beneficial for the Vols. And it seems like, Vinny, that curse, that Vol curse. I know y'all erased a little bit of it last year, but there's still the previous two seasons where it's like you give it away when you shouldn't, you know, and you know, is the tide turning in that series now where it's Tennessee is now starting to become the cursed team against Kentucky, or, you know, does that game scare you being in November?
That's usually when it always is. It used to be, you know, the last game of the season, you know, back in the day, you know, before they had start playing Louisville, it was always,
I remember, you know, it was 07. If y'all would have hung on, Georgia would have been in the SEC title game and would have smoked LSU.
Look, man, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was literally about to say, way to go, Kentucky. We're playing Georgia Tech. We're sitting here listening to it. And we're like, yes, we're about to go to the Citrus Bowl. We beat Georgia Tech to throw oranges out on the field. And next thing you know, Kentucky loses in overtime. Man. Way to go, guys. Way to go.
My sister and my dad and I, my dad just passed away last month. We said, we're going to go to every Tennessee Kentucky game until Kentucky wins. So we would go to Knoxville, we go to Lexington, we freeze, we make that sad walk out of Neyland, we make that sad walk out of Kroger Field, whichever it was. We made that walk out in 07 in overtime. We were about as sad as y'all were, Israel. So here's the crazy stat. You know, you talk about just weird, crazy stuff as far as long losing streaks and things of that nature. We already talked about Kentucky snapping the streak in Neyland Stadium in 84 as the first win in 36 years. Now you get them in Lexington with a chance to have a two-game winning streak against the Vols. You beat them last year. If they win this year, that'll be the first time they beat Tennessee in back-to-back years since 76-77. I was born in 77, so I've never seen us beat Tennessee 2 years in a row. So in that sense, it does scare me. You know, Kentucky should be better. Kentucky should be better. I always look at the schedule whenever there's a first-year coach on there. You know, you beat that dude's brains in. Coach Stoops caught his whoopings his first year. Everybody was, you know, killing Kentucky. Kick Josh Heupel's teeth in. Kick Shane Beamer's teeth in. So,
yes,
from that standpoint, Kentucky should handle Tennessee. You got a new guy coming in. They got sanctions. They're giving out McDonald's. They got all that stuff going on.
Giving out McDonald's.
Handle business against Heupel. So, you know, get that
happy meal, baby.
Yeah, get that two-game winning streak.
Oh, they're happy meals, all right.
They should do it. But when you've seen Kentucky lose to Tennessee so many different kinds of ways, it can't help but be in the back of our minds. It's not so much the players, because, you know, these guys weren't even born. They weren't around. But the fans will get that, oh, my God, feeling, oh, here we go again, you know, because that's still part of Kentucky fans that have been around and seen us lose, you know, a la LSU and the you know, Bayou Miracle, whatever they did to beat us in Lexington. We used to always find ways to lose. So that'll still be in the back of our minds against Tennessee. You know, last year up 34-7 in Neyland Stadium with 3 minutes left, I'm sitting there going, well, they can still score 4 touchdowns in these last 2 minutes and be because we seen us lose to Tennessee so many different ways, man. So, yeah, it's still in the back of our minds, you know, a little bit.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. So it's about that time. Vinny, now you get to pepper us.
I'm gonna come with my heavy hitter question. Like I said before we came on, I was saving this one for when I had you guys on Believe in Kentucky, but this is my number one burning question.
Oh, burning question. Okay. Here we go.
We all know what it's like to be fans. We know what passionate fan bases are like. Israel, you lived it and breathed it and played. Look, Georgia fans are as passionate as anybody. My question is this: where is everybody at on? And it's almost crazy when I ask it, but I still want to know, where's everybody at on Kirby Smart? We know he's one of those assistants who've never beaten Nick Saban yet. You all have had some chances. You all have had them beat a couple times. Y'all had them dead to rights. Weren't able to seal the deal. Georgia hasn't won a national championship since 1980. Now that's a long time for Georgia. They're a contender. They're in the mix every year. Y'all expectations are high. Just look, there's Kentucky fans who are tripping because they haven't been to the Final Four since 2015. There's fans that are like, oh my God, what is going on? So to be 40 years without a title, is everybody still cool with Kirby? Or is he getting a little flack for a couple of those missed opportunities? Where is everybody at on Kirby? Where are you guys at on him? I know he's an upgrade over Rick, but is some of his luster starting to kind of wear off already?
Israel, take this one.
You know, I actually just had this conversation today. One of my coaches, he's a big Georgia fan as well. No, you know, from my understanding, you know, the expectations always high, you know, especially when you have one of the top recruiting classes, you know, in the nation. What most of you don't understand is you're still having to teach, you're still having to coach. You're still asking young men to do something, you know, that a lot of them might not be, you know, used to doing, you know, and that's being held accountable for things, you know. That's one thing that, you know, Coach Rick instilled in us, being accountable, you know. That's one thing that Kirby Smart instilled in those guys, to be accountable. Well, he also holds himself accountable. He also knows that he should have won those games. You know, 2nd and 26 still haunts us. You know, we were one play away from winning the national championship, you know. So I think, you know, for me, Kirby's not on the hot seat. Coach Rick wasn't on the hot seat, in my opinion. either. You know, they wanted to change, and you know, they got changed. Kirby Smart's come in. He's done some great things. He's been there. But, you know, it's still in the back of your mind. You're still like, when Georgia's going to get over that hump? You know, it's been since 1980, and that's everybody's argument that we talk to. You know, well, we beat Florida, you know, the last 5-6 years, but they want to say y'all hadn't won a title, you know, since 1980. That doesn't matter. You know, we're talking about present day right now. You know, so I don't think he's on the hot seat. I think he's doing a great job. I think he's got a great staff around. I think he's doing everything the right way. You know, and winning that championship, you got to have a lot of things line up for you. You know, you got to have you can't have injuries. You know, some other team, you know, has to have injuries. You know, you got to have some luck, you know, going in the games. You got to hope that the starting quarterback's girlfriend breaks up with him, you know, the week of your game when you play him. You know, just little things like that, you know, that's going to give you an edge to win. You know, it ain't just, you know, my guy's better than yours. A lot of times it is, but, you know, it also takes luck to do those things. Because, you know, if we really look at it, Ole Miss should have beat Alabama last year. Mm-hmm. So it ain't always easy. You know, and that's what some people don't understand. You know, they want instant gratification. You know, all you guys have the top recruiting class right now. Yeah, well, guess what? We still have to teach those guys. They still have to learn the system. They still have to do things, you know, in order to win that national championship.
So there's no just crazy fanatic Georgia fans that are.
There are. There are. Like, there are. Yeah, I mean, you read some things, and if Kirby doesn't beat Clemson, they should fire him. You know, it's ridiculous, but you know, it's not realistic. It's those head in the clouds type fans that are. I mean, I think this is the year that he needs to get over the hump. And I think this is the year that he could. He's got a roster set up to be able to do so. And I do think it's important to beat Clemson because you get a certain level of momentum if you win that game. Mm-hmm. Now, losing that game in the grand scheme of things doesn't really hurt your chances of going to the national championship. But I think the confidence that you get from winning that game, which is now, I think, a very winnable game, to be able to make that run now. Okay, we beat Clemson, who they're not going to be as good, obviously, with losing what they lost. But, you know, you're going to get into a situation where, okay, you beat Clemson. And now my eyes are itching like crazy, allergies. But you beat Clemson. They're well respected. And it's like, oh my God, they beat Clemson. Okay. They're ready. So Kirby, to answer your question, long story short, Kirby's not on the hot seat. He will not be on the hot seat unless he says something completely out of line on Tuesday at media days. He's not on the hot seat. He doesn't have to win the Natty this year. I would love for him to. I think this is his best shot for a little while. But, I mean, this team's loaded. And this team's going to continue to be loaded. I don't know if these fans are paying attention to recruiting, but I don't know if they've seen our 2022 class. I don't know if they've seen the people we got on board for 2023. But it ain't slowing down. Yeah. And the only reason I think that Kirby might not be the first one to beat Saban is because Jimbo Fisher will get the first shot at him. Mm. And I do think that Texas A&M has a really good shot if they make the right choice at quarterback to beat Alabama. And that would be the only reason Kirby doesn't be the first to beat Nick Saban, because Ole Miss and Texas A&M play Alabama this year. Georgia wouldn't play them unless they qualified for the Western Championship. So for that reason and that reason alone, Kirby Smart will not be the first. But you could see a season where it's Jimbo and Lane Kiffin that beat Nick Saban. This, you know, with what they've got. So I'm not predicting that win, but I'm saying there's a definite possibility. But all this talk about Kirby being on the hot seat is absolute nonsense. He's been great for the University of Georgia. All the talk about Rick being on the hot seat, he was great for the University of Georgia. He did a lot of great things for the program. Sure, in 15 years, you're going to have a couple down seasons. That's, you know, that's normal. And unfortunately for Coach Rick, you know, he's dealing with Parkinson's disease now, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's a bit of sad news, or that's a lot of sad news. But, you know, when he left in 2015, you could tell that I think he was a little bit relieved because I think it needed to happen because he was burnout. And in turn, I think the fan base got burnout on Coach Rick. So yeah, all this it's been since 1980. And I think that's where all the frustration is. For Georgia fans, I just think they're, you know, it's okay. It's been 40 years. been almost 50 years since we won a national championship. We've been close. You know, I think if Jim Chaney doesn't go into the tank in the fourth quarter, we're not talking about this drought. We're talking about, okay, this is, you know, we're talking about Natty number two under Kirby and right. not Natty mm-hmm. number one. So, yeah. This is
the year. And I ask people all the time, where are you going to go get? If you fire Kirby, who are you going to go get?
Yeah.
Name one person that could take over that job right now.
And recruit at the same level.
Name one person.
Like, you're not getting Ryan Day, which I'm not so sure that Ryan Day is necessarily better.
Why would he leave Ohio State?
He wouldn't.
You know, you got to think if you fire Kirby, you got to think of who you're going to try to go get. Why would they leave a great place that they're already at?
Yeah, Ryan Day leaving.
You know what I mean?
Ohio State. Dabo ain't leaving Clemson, and I'm not so sure Dabo would be a good fit at Georgia anyway. Who else? We don't know about Sark. Everybody's quick to anoint Sark. We don't know anything about him. Kiffin's not necessarily. I mean, are you going to hire Kiffin? You're going to hire. You're going to hire Sam Pittman. I mean, I love Sam Pittman, but I don't know. Like, he's good for Arkansas.
Right.
Yeah, you can't. Like I said, you can't name a person that you're going to go out and get that's going to be like, oh, that is a home run hire. Because the next person to have the Kirby is going to be like, why did you get
Lincoln Riley?
Right.
No.
Yeah, you're not going to get Lincoln Riley. I would be hard pressed to think. And Georgia fans are like, oh, yeah, we'd throw the bank at him. Why would Sean McVay leave the Rams unless he got fired? He ain't getting fired, right?
No.
Why would Kyle Shanahan leave the 49ers? Yeah, why do you think Kyle Shanahan would work in college?
Yeah, these are guys who have had the opportunity to come to college, who they wanted to have college head jobs when they were coordinators, that turned it down because they wanted to stay in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this stuff that, you know, everybody's saying, old Kirby's on the hot seat, tell me who you're going to get. And not one person who is saying, well, this should be the year that Kirby does it, has told me a person that can be hired. Yeah. To replace Kirby Smart.
Mm-hmm.
So just sit back with your popcorn and your beer on your big screen. Enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show, man. And then clamor for John Gruden when we don't win the Natty.
Yeah.
John Gruden. Oh,
he bought some property beside a stone mountain. That'll be the rumor.
he flew into Atlanta. So what's he doing in Atlanta? Right. Oh, he's playing the Falcons? Man. Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. What else you got for us, Vinny?
That was the main one as far as I just threw the big one at you because
okay.
I just wonder because and you guys hit it. You got those friend fans that will talk crazy. But I just wonder.
We certainly have those.
Yeah.
You got the ones that kick over refrigerators. I've seen that before.
No, that's impressive.
Yeah. A full refrigerator. Got kicked over, and I say, you know what? It's time for me to go home.
Yeah, that was my main one for flip flop. I had to get some more, of course, queued up for y'all when we get you on Believe in Kentucky. But that okay. I just came out with the main one just to kind of get a pulse of what's the feeling going on down there because everybody does talk about, like you said, haven't won since '80. But I'm like, what do the objective Georgia fans think about Kirby. So that's why I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on it. You know,
we're not necessarily objective, but we're also realistic.
Well, realistic, not because like I said, you know, Kentucky fans, there's Kentucky fans who haven't been to a Final Four. We're talking 6 years ago and there's people losing their minds, you know, fire Calipari.
Let me ask you about Calipari. What are you and TD talking about that? Are you guys, do you think he's ready to move on or?
No, not after last year. You can't leave after going 9-16. You can't
can't
have the worst year in 100 years. And that's what you walk off on. He's all about, he even said it like his last call-in show to end the season. You know, everybody's laughing at us and, you know, get your jokes in now because, you know, have your fun while you can. Because he's all about, all right, let's fix this. And he hit the transfer portal just like Stoops did. And you could argue Kentucky football and basketball have successfully navigated the portal, you know, better than any two tandems in the country because he's restocked the roster. They couldn't shoot last year. You got guys that can shoot the rock now. You got pushed around because you had thin big men. Mm-hmm. We can get Oscar Tshiebwe, who's 270 from West Virginia, who transferred, and there might be another big coming. We'll see. So he addressed all those issues. He's not going to get caught in the situation he was in last year.
Yeah.
He's if you have a down year, if Kirby was to go 8-4, he'd be pissed and ready to fix it the following year. That's where Cal is now.
If Kirby goes 10-2, he's pissed and ready to fix it next year.
Right. Yeah.
If he has a bad practice, he's pissed and ready to fix it right now. So yeah, Tom Crean was actually really active. Got himself lost four starters and gained four starters in the portal. So it's kind of like it kind of looks like a fantasy basketball league where you're doing a bunch of dropping and adding. So I have no idea what Georgia basketball is going to look like to do a way too early Georgia basketball preview to say what they're going to look like. I could not tell you. I just know that we couldn't shoot threes. Yeah. We could drive and get to the hoop, but that didn't stop us. And we couldn't play defense. That didn't stop us from heaving threes and giving up transition buckets.
And we're glad to have Sevier Wheeler too. He beat us and then he joined us. And we're happy to have him, SEC leader in assist to dish the rock to all the shooters that
if you can't beat him, go steal him.
That's right. That's right. He beat us and joined us. One more question, man. Right. Israel, if NIL was a thing when you were playing, where would you have gone? Who would you have hit up to get an endorsement deal from? Would you went to your hometown? Would you went someplace in Athens? Where would you go?
I was just talking to my players about this. They're asking me. They said, "Coach, if this was going on, you were in school. I would have so many little small endorsements. Man, I'd be a millionaire. I wouldn't be coaching football. I tell you that. I'd be a millionaire right now." If I was able to, capitalize on these things, I was telling them, I got six jerseys right now that I framed, that people ask me for all the time. Our Power Ranger uniforms when we played Boise in the Dome that year, I have that one framed, people hit me up all the time, was asking for that one. So just little things like that, capitalizing on your player likeness, is huge. It is a huge deal. And like we talked on our last podcast, Corey, it's going to keep kids out of trouble. Mm-hmm. It's going to make you go to class. It's going to make you be eligible. It's going to make you do all those little things to where, because guess what? You want to get paid.
It's going to make you want to talk to the media.
Exactly. It's going to make you want to do all those little things that you hate doing. You're going to start doing it because if you don't, all that money that you're making is going to be taken away. Yeah. So I would have probably went to class a little bit more, if we had it. Just little things like that. I wouldn't have been as much of a turd as I was in college. it would have been huge, man. I love it. I think it's awesome. I think if handled the right way, family members and friends don't get greedy, for a lot of these players, I think it's going to be a great thing. I think it's going to be great. I think it's great for the sport. You make these billions of dollars. You see NCAA commercials. When the Final Four hit, the playoffs hit. Softball just this past year, all those people, at the softball championships. You just look at that. It's great for the sport. If I'm making this amount of money for you guys, at least let me make a little bit on the side, without any penalty. You're always working. That's the thing that people don't realize. You're always working. Yes, I have a scholarship, but I'm working for that scholarship every single day.
Yep.
And now you get paid, to work for your scholarship, do everything right. Now you get paid for it.
Yes.
Yeah. Work a camp, have an autograph session, little stuff like that.
Go to speaking engagements. Yeah. My car would look like a NASCAR. I'm stoked that, one of the biggest stories from this NIL thing is actually a women's basketball story. The Cavender twins from TikTok. Yeah. They got some big things in the works. Boost Mobile, I think, is their biggest sponsor. They've got some things going on, and so you know, I think the biggest worry was, well, it's going to be like 1% of college football. Well, they play at Fresno State.
Yeah.
You know, they're one of the lead stories of this whole NIL thing. So I'm excited to see that it's kind of starting to go right. Barstool is signing a bunch of athletes, Tate Ratledge and his mullet. If there was ever a Barstool athlete to come through Georgia, he was definitely one of them. Your boy Ben Jones and Boss Andrews were definitely also two of them that I think would have fit in the Barstool brand. If I played and I had NIL, I would have definitely had Inoko Express. Probably would have had All Good. Probably, let's see, where else would I have had? Probably would have had Chick-fil-A, let's be honest. shout out to Chris Burnett. So yeah, I would have tried to do all the little places that I go. And hey, let's just give me some cash, give me some free food, and let's be done with it. So
be good. I'll tweet it out.
Yeah, I'll tweet it out and I'll sign some autographs. And hey, let's rock and roll, man.
That's right.
So
my last name being Hardy, I would have of course went to Hardy's. So yes. I would have had to do a little something with them. And
you'd have been really screwed if you lived on the West Coast though, because it's not Hardee's, it's Carl's Jr.
That's right. Carl's Jr. wouldn't have worked the same. There's a little place in my hometown, you know, coming to Kentucky, the hoagie shop, you know, first place you get your license, everybody go through and get a milkshake, get a hoagie, get a hamburger. I would have definitely tried to work out a little something with them and then just, you know, autographs and, you know, work in a camp or something like that, stuff like that, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Would have just played your cards right with it.
There you go. That's it.
So, well, Vinny, it was a pleasure having you on, man. This is a lot of fun. This was a great way to kick off season two of the Believe in Georgia Dogs podcast, man. I look forward to doing it game week, and you know, we ought to get together during basketball season and try to get one. Maybe you can get me interested in basketball again. So I'm all for it, man. But you know, like I said, it was a pleasure having you. Where all can we find you? I know you're doing voiceovers now. Also, I just learned that. I didn't know that about you. So where all can we find you? Where can we find your work? And you know, what all are you up to?
Doing just one day at a time, man. Like having fun with this, just like you guys are. You can find me at Vinny Hardy, Vinny with a Y, Hardy with a Y on Twitter, at Believe in Kentucky on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Since we've done so much podcasting and talking, I have started where I'm set up to do, you know, voiceover work, you know, animation or audiobooks or, you know, commercials or radio, at Vin's Voiceovers on Twitter, Vinny's Voiceover on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook and all the other platforms. So if you know somebody that needs some voice work and my voice fits it, you need a Southern sounding voice, just let them know and tell them to holler at me and having fun with that as well. In addition to parenting like we're all doing and being husbands and fathers and all that everyday stuff that we do and having fun talking about the sports that we always talk about anyway. And here we are on podcast and hosting and talking with cool guests and chopping it up and on a platform like Believe and being able to enjoy that. So just having fun juggling everything and trying to keep all my ducks in a row. It's like the dude at the circus, you know, he's spinning the plates and you got to run and spin a plate, got to run and spin a plate. That's what we're all doing. And we all trying to keep our plates from crashing onto the floor and busting. And then we all trying to do the best job we can at keeping everything spinning and humming and working.
I hear that, man. I hear that. I know the plate spinning. I'm currently spinning four plates in the podcast world. So we're good, man. So
absolutely, man. You're doing a good job. Both of y'all are, man. It's always fun to be on with y'all. Enjoyed it last year. Crazy that it's already that time again, but you know, we can't wait. And I always enjoy listening to y'all, getting insight and hearing who y'all talk to and all the other podcasts you're on talking to SEC, man. It's great stuff, man.
It's all good, man. I enjoy it. And it's something that's a lot of fun. Israel, we'll have to get you on SEC After Dark. But you got to come ready with a beer. So, but yeah, we are the,
I'm always ready.
You're always ready. He does. He stays ready. So he doesn't have to get ready. That's
what he does. Whatsoever.
Israel Troop, brought to you by Choo Choo's restaurant.
That's right. So, that is correct.
And Raising Cane's. I would love to be sponsored by Raising Cane's. That sounds like a good idea.
Me too.
And sponsored by Barbaritos. So there you go. No, he's not really. All three of those places, if you do want to sponsor our show, let me know. Reach out. So, but we are the Believe in Georgia Dogs podcast. We are presented by betonline.ag. I want to thank Vinny again for coming on. For Israel Troop, Vinny Hardy, I'm Corey Burton. Thank you. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here next week on Brinks TV and everywhere you can find your podcast. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Good.
Perfect.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.